Hello, and welcome to the Foxworthy Podcast, episode number 4. I'm here again with my friend Taylor Gaines, and we are going to be discussing a few television-related items today. First up, we're going to talk a little bit about the new AMC spin-off series, Fear the Walking Dead. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the HBO miniseries that just wrapped up on Sunday, Show Me a Hero. And then finally, we were going to talk possibly a little bit at length about Hannibal, which just wrapped up its run on Saturday evening. So let's start talking about Fear the Walking Dead. Taylor, what was your what were your first impressions of the 90-minute pilot episode?
Well, for one thing, I thought it was too long. I guess I'll give my background on The Walking Dead in general.
I don't watch the parent show.
I saw most of season 2 because my roommates watched it freshman year of college, so I think it was season 2. It was one where they're out on the farm,
mm-hmm.
but I just remember watching it and not being that interested really in anyone or anything that was happening, so I never attempted to watch any more than that. But I felt like, you know, Fear the Walking Dead as a spinoff, as a prequel, it's only 6 episode first season, that the ability to fix or hone what was wrong with the parent show could be, you know, adjusted into making Fear the Walking Dead a better show than The Walking Dead might be. So I just figured I'd give it a shot. So I've seen the first 2, I guess, because the last one aired.
Yeah, they aired
2 nights ago.
The second episode on Sunday evening. We're recording on Tuesday morning.
Right.
So overall, though, like, do you think the characters are interesting? Do you think the writing is interesting? Do you think the filmmaking is interesting? What struck you as positive? Anything that stood out?
I think there's some interesting ideas that the show is playing with, just that zombie apocalypse entertainment in general gets to play with. I think my favorite part of the first episode was probably when the traffic got stopped up and I don't know anyone's names at this point.
Yeah, that was a good scene where, like, the two, the Kim Dickens character and Cliff Curtis.
Right.
Sorry, we can't remember their character names at the moment.
They get out of their car and they're looking up ahead. Madison Clark is her name. Travis Manawa is his name. I don't know that they've ever said his last name on the show or not. But yeah, when they get up and they're looking out and, you know, just that sense of, like, not really knowing what's happening, but the audience knowing that something much worse than what the characters think is happening. Was interesting to me. And then obviously they threw in the bit about, like, showing the guy get shot and not go down.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm trying to say is the idea of the virus spreading from, you know, like, one person to an entire population, just that process is kind of interesting.
Right.
I think the challenge that this show is going to have and already does have, mm-hmm. is making us care about the families that our story is centered around. Like, what was your reaction to that main, you know, blended family of Kim Dickens and Cliff Curtis and all their kids?
Yeah, so let me first start by saying that I understand that The Walking Dead is not for everyone, and I get that. That's fine. But I feel like it's kind of gotten a bad rap because of how popular it is. And I have to say that it's not my favorite show that's on TV, but I do really enjoy it. I think there's a lot of good actors on it, and I think that the production value is usually very high, and, you know, the filmmaking is interesting from time to time. So I actually really enjoy, like, watching it, but I wouldn't say that I'm, like, a diehard fan, but I look forward to it when it's on. Plus, it's kind of similar to Game of Thrones in the way that it's one of the things that everyone watches, so it's kind of something to talk about because most people are watching it. But with that being said, I think for me so far, the characters are not as interesting yet to me as any of the characters that are on The Walking Dead, but that may just be because I've spent 5 seasons with those people and I've spent, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours with these new characters. I do think Kim Dickens is a really good actress, so I'm looking forward to, like, maybe seeing, you know, where her character goes, and hopefully she doesn't get killed off, like, really quickly or, like, surprisingly, because, I mean, she's definitely an asset to the show, I think, if they give her, you know, some interesting things to do down the line. I'm not too invested in them. I do think it's interesting that we're starting off with a family unit. I mean, on The Walking Dead, you have Rick and his wife, spoiler alert, before she dies in the third season. You have him, Rick, and his wife, and then their kid, and then obviously his wife Lori has another child. So there is sort of a family unit, but you don't really follow them from the first episode and kind of carry through. And I mean, so I don't know. I do think that the pilot was pretty good. I wasn't like overly enthusiastic about it, but I agree with you that was probably one of the strongest scenes in the pilot, was when they get stuck in traffic and they can't really see what's going on, and then everyone kind of sees on the news. And it is interesting, there's a lot being made of the fact that if you watch The Walking Dead, you're much further along in the story of what kind of happens to the world post, you know, the virus and post the zombie apocalypse. So we kind of know what is coming and, like, how you kill the zombies. We already know, spoiler alert again, that everyone is infected, whether they're a zombie or not. So when you die, you become a zombie.
I guess one of the benefits of me not watching the show is that I don't know most of those things. I think I knew the headshot thing.
Thing is fairly common.
For example, I didn't know that until you just said that.
Well, that's why I said spoiler alert.
Infected.
Spoiler alert.
But to your point about the family on The Walking Dead, I think that's what's interesting about this show as an idea, if maybe not so much in practice yet, is that the original Walking Dead, and obviously, tell me if this is wrong, but seems to be more about, like, surviving with your makeshift family, like, making family with people that you're kind of forced onto, whereas this show is going to take more of the approach of, you know, trying to keep together the family you do have when this horrible apocalypse starts affecting you, coming on to society.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to the idea of a spinoff. I am sort of, and I'm not the first person to say this, but I'm sort of surprised that after all the sort of deliberating and thinking about what they could do a spinoff about, that this is what they landed on. Because there quite literally is an infinite number of possibilities. They could have picked anywhere in the States, or really, assuming that the apocalypse has spread to the rest of the world, like, you could pick a place anywhere in the world and tell a story. And so, for me, like, this first season is 6 episodes, you know, we have 4 left. I'm definitely all in on these 6 episodes just to kind of see where they go, because it's such a short season, but it's already been renewed, and I almost wonder if this, this is not necessarily an original idea, but this is something that I would have fully support if this is the direction that they went, to have this spinoff be like an anthology show, where each kind of season is maybe a mini-series or, like, just a totally different story following a totally different group of people just within this world. Because that way, if you're kind of not interested in whatever the characters are that they introduce, you just wait out those 6 episodes, and then the next season you're, like, hopping in with a totally new group that you may like more.
Isn't next season a 15-episode order?
I think it's 15, yeah.
Because I haven't heard anything about what they're planning to do. That is...
Yeah.
Interesting, but I'm assuming they're going to keep this group.
My understanding is, at this point, I think they're going to keep... Well, assuming that these characters survive, you know, the main characters that we've met so far, that they survive this 6-episode, you know, shortened first season, we'll be following them for another 15 hours next year. And I don't know yet... It's just too early to tell, you know, whether or not I care or if I'm invested, but... I do kind of just, like, my mind keeps kind of, like, it kind of just, like, I get this little tickle in the back of my brain, like, how cool would it be if, like, just every, if they just did, like, 6 episodes, then dropped those characters or wrapped up their story or whatever, and then hopped onto another group or went kind of globetrotting and we saw different parts of the world, and just there's kind of infinite possibilities, and so it's interesting that this is what we're getting.
And it's interesting that you bring up the different locales that they could take place in, because one of the things that hasn't stood out to me about these first 2 episodes is a particularly, like, strong sense of place, because I like, you know, it's in LA, right? It's in LA, but,
like, I guess my understanding is they shot the pilot actually in LA, and then they actually switched to Vancouver for the remaining episodes of the season.
But one of my favorite shows of all time, Justified,
great show,
was one of the great things about it was that I felt like I was in Raylan County, or not Raylan County, Harlan County.
Harlan County.
Like, I felt like I was in Harlan County, like, I knew the place, like, that right. was, it was just such a strong,
and it
like,
wasn't even shot in Kentucky at all.
Yeah.
So well, it's like, they just kind of stuck to these characteristics and made it, like, such a rich sense of place.
Well, I guess my point is, I just don't feel like I know or understand whatever version of LA they're portraying.
Right.
Like, it could be anywhere. Like, it could be any yeah. big city as far as the first two episodes are concerned, really. But, I don't know. I've seen this complaint a lot. I want to know what your thought is on this.
Okay.
As you know, a lot of people dislike a lot of teenage children on a lot of TV shows.
Yeah.
And many people have objected to this particular group of teenage children as just as annoying as any other... I can't think of the examples, like the Homeland kids or like...
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, what are your thoughts on the kids so far in this one? You got the heroin addict son and the girl...
Well, I don't have a problem with them, really. I mean, they're not particularly that interesting. Although, I will say that... what's that actor's name? Frank Delane, who plays Nick, the heroin addict... I don't know if I want to say, like, he's an amazing actor or, like, he's a great performer, but he's kind of interesting to watch. And they did this sort of heavy-handed thing in the pilot where he had this kind of limp that was kind of almost, like, mirroring, like, oh, like, he's alive, but he kind of walks like a walker, and, like, we're about to go into this world where, like, there's walkers everywhere. And those, you know, probably a little on the nose, but he was okay. Like, I think he's kind of interesting. I'm not, like... thoroughly rejecting those characters necessarily, but like again, like it's hard when a show is just starting out. Pilots are often tough to do, and then you have the second episode, which like you have to keep the momentum going of the pilot. So I don't want to brush it off too quickly, and I really don't want to like just, you know, trash it, but it's not as strong for me as, you know, what we've seen on the parent show yet. But like there's a possibility it could be better or the same level of quality at some point, but
yeah, I definitely don't believe in deciding on a show after one or two episodes, but because there's stuff there, but there's stuff that isn't
right.
working yet. Maybe
right.
I'm just kind of waiting to see if it'll what it yeah. will develop into.
And let's be clear, this is not a terrible show. It's not one
no,
of the worst things
like,
that's ever been put on television. There are some people out there that are like, it's too slow, it's too boring, it's whatever, and I wouldn't say that necessarily, but...
It's almost like a Marvel movie, where you watch it...
I want to see where you're going with this.
You watch it, and you're kind of just blank. At least this is how I feel when I watch Marvel movies now, where I'm just like, you know, I didn't mind being in the theater for that, but I also got really nothing out of it. Like, like the Age of Ultron, I just kind of was like... That was a good time, and then never. I haven't thought about it since I saw it. You know, I don't know if that's a weird comparison. But.
Interesting. I'm pretty much all in on the Marvel stuff. Like even though some of them are a little bit disposable, I watch them and I really enjoy them. But yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. So maybe is there anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, yeah, four episodes left. We'll see how.
Hopefully if we get into a routine and try to record every week and get it out on a regular basis, we can keep watching the season and maybe we'll come back to it at the end, of the six episodes and talk about what we thought of the kind of first season impressions. All right, well, let's move on to the HBO miniseries, the David Simon written/show Show Me a Hero. Starring Oscar Isaac. It was a 6-episode miniseries based on a book by Lisa Belkin about public housing in Yonkers in like the late 80s and early 90s. So they ran it for 3 weeks. It ended on Sunday. They did 2 episodes a night.
It burned it off.
Yeah. So what were your overall feelings on it? Because I really liked it. I thought it was really strong.
Yeah, I think this was something I really enjoyed. Full disclosure, I still haven't watched The Wire.
Yeah, me neither.
But I'm kind of in, like, a David Simon, like, obsession
mm-hmm.
right now.
Right.
Like, I read his book from, what was it, the 80s, I guess, the 90s, that Homicide, mm-hmm. where he spends a year, this is back when he's purely a journalist, I guess, where he spends a year embedded in the Baltimore Homicide Department and basically just tells the stories of everyone, like all the police, all the people in the neighborhoods and things like that. And that's just that was probably one of my favorite books that I've ever read. So I went out and bought the corner where the one about the
yeah,
drug
which they
corner.
Also I think adapted into like a mini series or something.
Right. So that's I've been reading his books and then the show was coming on and I was like, well, I guess this might be my first exposure to David Simon, the television writer.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was really good. I the subject matter was like a little boring at times, just because it's, you know, what it is.
Yeah.
But the way that they really dealt with all the people as humans, like as complex mm-hmm. characters, like the work they did with, it's a true story, so I don't even. It's almost unfair to say.
Yeah, I mean,
this, but
spoilers for history.
But what's her name? The old woman who switches sides by the end.
Catherine
Keener is the
role.
Is the actress. Mary Dorman.
Mary Dorman.
Dorman is the real woman that she was playing.
Right.
Which is why I hesitate to say the transformation that David Simon did, but like the
right.
transformation of this woman from where she was at the beginning with, you know, if we let the low-income people into our neighborhood, it's going to
mm-hmm.
ruin our lives and change our lives. And then, you know, kind of realizing that fight is lost and then just learning to accept people as her neighbors and see them as equals. Like, I thought her arc was the best example of what that show did really well.
Yeah.
Just to show humans trying to be decent humans.
Yeah. And we should clarify and kind of expound upon, like, what they were actually trying to accomplish.
Right.
So, a judge has ordered a certain number, was it 800 units? Or
I thought it was 200.
200 units? I don't know where I got 800. 200 units of public housing to be built in Yonkers. And, of course, the people in the sort of suburban neighborhoods are skeptical about that, and they're essentially being racist and saying that, you know, these low-income people are going to bring crime and drugs and, you know, they're not going to keep the area nice, et cetera, et cetera. And so, at the beginning, Catherine Keener's character, you know, the real person, Mary Dorman, is very much against the public housing and, you know, her and her husband kind of, they show them kind of siding with the people, the large voice of the population that doesn't want the housing to be built anywhere near them. And she eventually sort of kind of slowly actually, which I think was kind of going back to what you were saying, like the way they handled her arc was really interesting. She doesn't just flip a switch and she's like, okay, like I'm going to help the residents now.
Well, what's interesting is I don't think she thinks she's being racist.
Right.
Like I think everyone on the show kind of really believes in what they're espousing.
Right.
In like they don't mean it in like a hateful way. Like obviously it sounds like it is, but you know, it's not irrational to imagine someone just being like, you know, if all this drug dealing is happening in our neighborhood, of course our houses are going to sell for less. You know,
right,
that's
they're
gonna,
worried about property
that's
values,
screw up
et cetera.
Our livelihood or whatever. But I think that's actually the hallmark of the few David Simon works that I've interacted with, is that he's really good at treating every person very fairly. Every character is treated in a very balanced way. I feel like in his Homicide book, there's a lot of stuff that you kind of start thinking like, man, like, you know, this super far left point of view is off base, and this super far right point of view is off base. And, like, the truth is, like, a mix of both. It's, like, something in the middle.
Right.
And I feel like that's kind of the way he presents his stories.
Right.
It's just, as a, I guess because he's a journalist
that,
at heart.
Yeah, that probably comes from his journalism background. But, yeah, we keep mentioning The Wire, which I definitely want to watch, but it's one of those things that I feel like I'm just saving for when I have absolutely nothing to do and I can just, like, really watch it and, like, soak it in. David Simon was the showrunner on The Wire. He also did another HBO series, which was maybe less well-received, but still I've heard some pretty positive things. It definitely has its supporters. Tremé, which I believe was about kind of New Orleans post-Katrina and, like, kind of, like, the city recovering and
the music
all
industry.
Of that. And then the music kind of coming back and kind
well,
of just the revival of New Orleans.
I believe Generation Kill.
Yeah, Generation
which
Kill, which is that scripted?
Don't know.
Because for a while I kept seeing the art for it, and it, for whatever reason my mind went to, oh, that must be a documentary. But it might be a
scripted.
Might be a scripted series.
And then you mentioned The Corner.
The Corner,
which was made into
yeah.
a miniseries.
And Homicide was a TV show. I don't know how much it actually
has
to do with the book.
Either.
I think he was involved in it, but it was way before like he started working with HBO. I think it was actually on Fox, and it ran for several years. I don't know about his involvement, but
we probably should talk about Oscar Isaac at some point.
I mean, we definitely should. this guy, it's funny because I feel like I talk to people about like, oh, Oscar Isaac's a great actor, and pretty much 99% of the time I get the reaction of, who's that? Which to me is a little bit baffling because he's definitely, I don't think I've ever seen something that he's been in where I'm just like, yeah, that guy's not that great. Like, he's great.
I feel like he's been busy, too.
And he's been in more and more stuff. He's going to be in Star Wars The Force Awakens coming in December, which is a big deal.
I'm sure after December everyone will know.
Yeah, everyone will know who he is. He's also in the X-Men, the new X-Men movie that's coming out next year as the villain. Which, those are just kind of the major projects, but I mean, he was in the Coen Brothers Inside Llewyn Davis, which I really liked, and he was really good in that. That was maybe my first exposure to him, to be honest, but he's really good in A Most Violent Year. He's been in all kinds of stuff.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, which I actually enjoyed a lot, too. But he's fantastic, and I thought this was a really good role for him. I thought this was a great showcase for what he can do.
Just another great example of capturing the contradictions and complexities of just being a person.
Yeah.
Because his character / real person that he played,
mm-hmm.
Nick Wasisco, was like an honest man. He was elected the youngest mayor in American 28 history,
years
right?
old. Yeah, I think at the time, youngest mayor in the country.
And
only 28.
And he was basically trying to get the housing bill through so that the low-income housing would be built, and obviously facing a lot of public backlash.
I read somewhere, not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but I read somewhere that I guess at this period of time in politics, I don't know if it was just in that area or kind of all over the states, but the mayor didn't really have a whole lot to do and like didn't really have a lot of power in a way that they might now. So it was kind of a point in history where the mayor was just sort of there, and I don't think they really had much.
Well, I believe
they couldn't really do much. They
in the
didn't
course
have a lot
of the
of
show,
control.
In the course of the show, he helped pass that bill to make the term 4 years instead of two, right? For the mayor of Yonkers.
Right.
I don't know. I guess it was just for Yonkers, but yeah, like because you just got the sense that he was a decent guy, trying to do the right thing, and definitely in the first 3 episodes or so, like, you really just feel like the world is out to get him, and he's just a hero.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then it kind of takes a turn towards the end where you're like, where you start to think, you know, he's also kind of just doing this stuff to help his own political career, to the point where he starts doing things that are strongly at the expense of his wife,
mm-hmm.
In order to keep having a say in the government.
Right, there's that great scene in the very first episode where Winona Ryder's character and him are, like, at the bar, and she's kind of just gotten out of politics. She does eventually get back into politics, but they have that scene, which I feel like is kind of an interesting foreshadowing, and I thought about that scene when I was watching the finale last night, where she says, like, she's talking about how difficult it is to be away from it and to not be in the system and, like, in the, you know, working in politics, and she's basically saying, like, she wants to get back in, and, like, it's just really difficult to be out of it after being in it for a while. And so I feel like that kind of, the end of his story kind of just touches back on that. Like, he just had a really hard time after someone else is voted in mayor, and then he tries I guess he tried to, he got elected city councilman again, and then just kind of did all these weird political machinations to, like, you know, either be able to run for mayor again or just, like, have a position in the political system, but he was just kind of stabbing people in the back to get what he wanted, which is just very interesting because it kind of colors his... It definitely makes him seem more like a real person.
Yeah, because it doesn't make you dislike him.
No.
But you also, you know, don't view him as this, like, glorified figure as you might have in the first episode
right.
or two. And I think a lot of that has to do with Oscar Isaac and how... Just how many different emotions
yeah.
he can portray just on his face in a split second or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, he's he's
like
mega talented for sure.
And I guess we shouldn't spoil the ending just because this is only six episodes
yeah.
and people should watch it.
I definitely
it.
Recommend it. It's
it is a true story,
really
so
good.
You might know what happens.
Right.
But basically, you should watch it, and it's
yeah,
it's really good storytelling. I do want to talk a little bit about the people that live in the low-income housing who seem unconnected to the story for most of the show.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I want to know what your impressions were of how they handled that, because a lot of times I felt like that wasn't as interesting, and not just because it wasn't connected, but because it was... Some of the portrayals just felt like... I know it's a true story, obviously, but they
mm-hmm.
felt like things... that you would see in any other show,
right.
you know, like girl gets knocked up, but the husband can't stay out of jail kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
Like what were your thoughts on those kind of ancillary characters?
So I kind of agreed at first, like the first maybe two or three episodes, that those two parts of the story felt really disconnected. You have the people in the government, you know, dealing with the public policy and, you know, fighting for the housing, fighting against the housing. And then you see the lives of the actual people that might potentially live in this housing when they actually build it. And for a while, those probably the first half of the series, it seems like those two stories are very disconnected, which I feel like was completely intentional to sort of show the disconnect between, you know, the people, you know, deciding these people's fates, basically, and the way these people are actually living and how they are as people. But they definitely weren't three-dimensional at first, and it seemed like the first two episodes, maybe especially those early episodes, there was a lot of focus on Oscar Isaac's character and sort of what he was up to, and then the scenes with the tenants were incredibly short and quick, and you were kind of just getting very quick bits of their life that weren't very detailed or even really that interesting.
I almost felt like a lot of them didn't get enough of that time to really develop into a like three-dimensional character. Like I thought that the old blind woman, I think Norma might have been her name.
Norma, yeah, I think her name was Norma.
And the girl who wound up leading like her little neighborhood council thing.
Yeah.
I thought those two were a good example of like characters that were handled well, and like you felt like they were three-dimensional and human, and like they got their fair share of story. Where, like, the girl, Bobby, who didn't want to go to school and wound up, like, rebelling against her parents, like, I just felt like she never had enough time to actually be someone.
Right.
Like, it was kind of just, like, you didn't
yeah.
never really knew why she was doing anything. Or...
Sort of the economics of time, and, like, they had, you know, they just kind of, like, yeah, I don't know if that was, like, and my understanding is I heard somewhere, it might have been on a different podcast on NPR or something, somebody was saying that those stories are in the book, but I wonder if maybe in the book they're kind of like that, where they're not as detailed or not, they don't tell you as much, or like some people are kind of get more time to develop than others. But what's interesting, I think, is that in those early episodes, Oscar Isaac's, I guess the thing that's interesting about the Nick Wasisco character slash real life person was that he isn't really a hero, and at the beginning when he is the mayor, the judge orders the public housing, but the main reason that he's fighting for it to go through and for it to happen is because the city is going to be fined and go bankrupt. So he's doing it out of necessity, not necessarily out of like any source of any sense of like, oh, this is a good thing to be doing. But then I think he comes to realize that, and I thought that the scene in the finale that I think really stood out to me was the scene where he actually goes to the new public housing once it's finally built and everything, and he meets that woman, Norma, that is partially blind from her diabetes. And, like, I just thought that was a really powerful scene because you see those two characters completely in two completely different planes, almost in two completely different stories, and then they kind of dovetail at that very end. And that one scene was just really interesting where they kind of ask each other, you know, was it worth it? I thought that was a really, really well-performed scene and just really interesting. I don't know if that's something that's in the book that actually happened or if for dramatic purposes they put that in to sort of give some sort of satisfying, you know, something satisfying for the finale, but yeah, I really liked that scene a lot.
I think the groundwork that was laid definitely paid off.
Yes, very much
that,
so.
In that instance. But I think, you know, just, it's something people should check out, you know?
Yeah,
just
and especially since it is, take a look it at is
it.
Real.
It's only six episodes.
Yeah, six episodes. It's you know, it really happened. It's something I didn't know anything about. I feel like I learned something, which I know some people don't care about that. But
I mean, David Simon
always
calls himself the PBS of HBO.
Right? I've never heard that, but that makes total sense.
I think I've heard him say that in an interview.
Eventually, I will get to the other David Simon shows. I will watch The Wire. I will watch Treme. And I will have more of a sort of well-rounded understanding of, you know, his work in television. But we should also mention that the direction I thought was really solid throughout. It kind of didn't really get in the way of, there wasn't anything too flashy, but there was a lot made of sort of the council scenes where everything kind of felt very claustrophobic. And that was a deliberate decision by the director of all six episodes is Paul Haggis, who some people may know from the somewhat controversial 2004, I think, Best Picture winner, Crash, which I haven't seen, so I have no opinion. But, yeah, Paul Haggis directed all of them, and then I think David Simon wrote them with some other writer that he worked with on The Wire, I think, right? For each episode, they're credited.
I think David Sorsky.
William F. Sorsky or something?
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
it's
I don't want
to. Z-O-R-C-I. But yeah, so speaking of directing, I think we should.
But yeah, this just yeah on the subject of directing, we'll segue right into Hannibal, which wrapped its third and for now final season on NBC on Saturday. So first of all, I know this is speaking in the past tense, it was your favorite show on TV. How did you feel about the ending?
Man, this is almost pointless to point out, but there's 5,292 people that have ranked the finale on IMDb, and it's got 9.9 out of 10 stars, which probably sums up how I felt about it pretty well, because I just, the whole aura of this show, the acting, the visuals, the music, the sound, everything about it just had basically had me in, you know, a trance. It was like a dreamlike experience watching this show for so long, for all 39 episodes or whatever it is. And, I mean, this was no different. I mean, I haven't really watched an episode of Hannibal that I don't like. I know a lot of people had issues with the early part of this season and the Europe trip and whatnot.
I thought that stuff was great.
But
I liked that.
It's something about the pretentiousness of it, which I know Brian Fuller has referred to himself.
It's intentional. We mentioned this the last podcast.
We talked about this before, but something about the pretentiousness of it and how aware it is of that is, like, intoxicating. Where you're like, okay, if they're that aware of it, then I don't even care that it's that ridiculous.
Right.
And I'm just going to, like, soak all this in because the performances are great.
Yeah.
The visuals are amazing. And there's something, like, darkly beautiful and funny about it, like, almost all the time.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's always this weird sort of underlying, like, dark humor and, like, just, like, yeah, it's very artsy. Very visually stunning, especially, I'm sure we're going to get to this, the last, like, 10 minutes of the series finale.
The last episode was directed by Michael Reimer, who I believe has directed more than a few Hannibal episodes. That name sounds... Yeah, 9 Hannibal episodes.
Okay.
And he's done other shows, American Horror Story, The Killing, Flash Forward back in the day, that was a classic. Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, so he's a pretty common TV director, but I feel like when you're directing Hannibal, you're just kind of... You just have to step into the shoes of whoever
right,
did
you
it
have
before
to
you.
Do the Hannibal aesthetic with,
I guess,
like,
David Slade gets the credit for that, right? Because he was the director of the pilot.
I think he directed the pilot, yeah.
And obviously Fuller...
Probably has a hand in that, too.
And Lightfoot, I think
Steve Lightfoot writes
also,
a lot, and
yeah.
I think directs a lot. He definitely writes a lot. His name is on a lot of the writing credits.
And obviously we don't know the names of everyone involved, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, credit to all of them, because this show was just unlike anything else. I know we've said that before on this podcast, probably the very last podcast that we did, I guess.
Yeah.
But I guess since we've talked about this show before, we should talk specifically about this episode. And as you just mentioned, the last 10 minutes had this, I guess, is balletic a word? Like, ballet...
It had a ballet quality,
like,
for sure.
Like, it was a fight scene that was somehow more beautiful and striking than any fight scene I feel like I've ever seen on TV. And it was also quite gory.
Once again, this was aired on network television on NBC. Much has been made of that that three-way fight scene between the Red Dragon character Hannibal and Will Graham. I thought that was an amazing sequence. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it, even on Hannibal, or definitely not on any other show.
When the music kicked in,
amazing.
You know the song, right? It was
Was it a new song?
Yeah, it
was
written
for the show. That's,
yes,
because that's. I thought I saw that on Twitter.
It was an artist whose name I honestly don't know how to pronounce. It was like Sayo, this Sayosi. I'm gonna butcher this. If you know how to pronounce that,
Susie Sue, maybe. I don't know if you.
I have no idea.
Yeah, of course.
But anyway, the song is called "Love Crime." And apparently it's the first song that she's released, this English singer-songwriter, in 8 years, is what I read somewhere.
Oh, wow.
But when that song kicked in and everything kind of slowed down into...
Yeah.
Slow motion. Slowed down into slow motion, I guess.
Slowed down.
But when that happened, and that was when I just kind of froze and got goosebumps and was like, man, this show, I can't believe, is ending. Because... nothing else gives me stuff like this.
Yeah.
Watching Hannibal and Will, I guess, kill together for the first time.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to find beautiful, but it really was. And it was like, it was just such an interesting ending and such a perfectly Hannibal-esque ending to what is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that it was a great episode, but how do you feel about it as a series finale? Like, assuming that there in no way is ever any more Hannibal in movie form or streaming season 4 or whatever the case may be,
well,
I don't know if I found it that satisfying as a series finale. I mean, I'll take it, because it was a great episode, but...
I'm a little conflicted on that point, because... on one hand... pretend that the after-credit scene didn't happen for a second.
Okay.
In that case, I thought the ending was almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because, despite Jack... despite Jack Crawford getting shortchanged a little bit, for someone who was so important to the show, he didn't have a lot to do in the last episode and didn't really have an ending himself. But the ending of Will Graham realizing that whether he's with or without Hannibal, it's unhealthy for him, and to like take that plunge over the cliff just to end it all once and for all, and to do it in like a tight embrace with him and stuff was like
people have called it romantic.
I don't know if romantic is the right word, but like there was something very satisfying about that as an ending, to know that these two were connected and they're also destructive and they can't live without each other or with each other. I think that was actually a line from the episode that Gillian Anderson says to him, "We can't live with him, can't live without him." But I thought that ending itself was just about perfect, I thought. If I were to never see the show again.
Yeah.
But the ending bit throws a lot of wrenches into that particular
thought. A post-credit scene. I was first alerted to it. I guess Gillian Anderson made a comment on Twitter about, like, make sure you watch after the credits, which now it makes sense why, because she was the only person we see in the post-credit scene. I know you weren't really a fan of it, or explain, because we texted about it a little bit. But
I think the reason I didn't like it is because I knew that we're not getting any more of this.
Right. Well,
and I really liked...
We're assuming that we're not getting any more.
So I liked the thought of the ending where the ending was.
Yeah.
But if I knew there was a season 4 coming or something, then I might feel differently about it, because the ending does introduce some interesting possibilities, because my first thought was, you know, they're showing the table, and then it turns out that it's her leg on the table.
Right.
Gillian Anderson, obviously.
Yeah.
Did you say that already? Bedelia.
Yeah.
But my first thought looking at it was only Hannibal could prepare a meal like this, the way that everything's tied up and like decorated. I'm like, okay, we're meant to believe that he is alive, possibly coming to eat her.
Right.
And she's, you know, grabs the fork to like defend herself or whatever. Although I did read at least one person, I think it was Alan Sepinwall, who was like saying that he thought that she cut off her own leg.
Like, she kind of went crazy.
Was, like, waiting, like, because she knew Hannibal got out of jail, so she was, like, waiting for him to come.
Right.
I don't know. That was a different... And so, obviously, in his interpretation of it, Hannibal could actually be dead, and she just has lost her mind.
Which is crazy. So it's just kind of, like, a weird, quirky coda to the whole thing.
But it was funny, because Fuller, in this interview, was like, that's funny that you think of it that way, because I never... Like, we didn't really intend it that way. We intended it as, like, it could be Hannibal, it could be Will, it could be someone else.
The way I read whatever Fuller's comment was, like, his intention when they thought that they might have another season was absolutely, like, the implication that Hannibal was alive, and maybe Will, or maybe not Will, but...
I think Will, because I think he said in one interview where he's like, I really think the story of Will was like just about to get interesting.
Yeah.
Like one of those things that you hate when a showrunner says it, because they always say it when their show gets canceled, where they're like, you know, it was actually about to get to the best part. And you're like, oh, of course it was.
Of course. Well, I mean, I think all the parts of Hannibal are the best parts, quote unquote.
But yeah, I think season one is probably my high point.
Still your favorite?
Yeah.
I actually think this last season was my favorite.
And it's unfair of me to say that, because I don't dislike any of the seasons.
Right.
I like them all a lot. I just think season one was the one that really was like... Like, if I had to pick one to go back and watch today, I would probably just do that one.
This third season for me was just artistically really ambitious. They kind of told two... It was almost like two half seasons in one. They had the one arc in Italy and Europe...
Which they sort of did last season as well.
And then they had the Red Dragon stuff, which I dug. And then, the finale was good. I don't know if I'm alone in this. There's other, you know, television writers and television critics who seem to think that there will be more Hannibal at some point. I definitely think we're looking at, like, a movie, like, 4 or 5 years down the line.
I could see
that. Because they're all tied up with other projects now, you know, all the actors have been released from their contracts. We talked about this a little bit the last time, but something just tells me that Fuller will go work on something else, and in a couple of years, he'll have a script for a film, and he'll give us a little bit more.
I tell you what, if that's a film, I'm in line. I'm in line 48 hours before it comes out, just waiting.
Yeah,
I do think it is worth pointing out that this is a show that had so many disgusting things on it just from the first episode.
Yeah.
And yet it somehow kept topping itself to the point where this season we got a human who was turned into a heart, which then turned into a stag and walked towards Will.
That scene was bananas. What was happening?
We got a man eating another man's lips off of his face.
Yep.
We got a kaleidoscope sex scene.
Someone burned alive.
We got someone burned alive.
And lived and just, like, was completely just charred from top to bottom.
We got an eel going straight down someone's throat.
Yep.
Until they died, I suppose. It just never, it never let up, but it was never not enjoyable to me.
Yeah.
This is a show that I don't begrudge anyone for not liking or watching, because it's just so, it's so out there and it's so gross.
It is,
but
it is really, really gross at times.
But
like, you're grossed out, but you can't look away.
It's, I'm gonna miss it.
Yeah.
Say that.
I will just kind of cross my fingers and hope, you know, I'll be interested to see what happens with Fuller's new show on, what is it, Stars, right? Is it Stars?
So.
American Gods? Yeah, we mentioned American Gods in episode 3 of our show. I think we'll see more Hannibal at some point. I really, for whatever reason, I don't see it going on as either a miniseries or another full season that somebody else picks up, whether it's Hulu, Amazon. I mean, they've all passed for now, but who knows? Maybe there'll be a new streaming service that'll come about and pick it up. I feel like more realistically, I feel like it will definitely at some point be a movie. But, you know, I don't know. It may never happen, but we'll see. So I think that kind of wraps up the main topics that we wanted to cover today. Is there anything else you want to mention about the things we discussed or anything coming up? Something you're excited about for the fall, movie or TV-wise?
I'll say, I don't know if this is a fair answer to that question, but I'm really excited for the last 5 episodes of Comedy Central's Review.
Okay.
Which I think is also...
I love Review.
Also one of my favorite shows on television. And I guess You're the Worst comes back in like a week.
Yeah.
So as far as network stuff goes, I think the only thing I know I'm going to watch right now is The Muppets.
Yes.
I'm glad
we're both excited about the Muppets, because I'll definitely watch that, and I really hope that it isn't disappointing. It looks pretty clever.
But, you know, I believe FX's president, John Landgraf, discussed this at press tour like a month ago, but there were more than 400 scripted original shows on TV this year, which is insane. So there's always stuff, and there's going to be some stuff throughout the rest of the
year.
And
there's been a lot of sort of think pieces and essays written the last couple weeks since the press tour when Landgraf made that comment about too much TV. And there's not anything really that we can add to it other than there just literally is
other
so
than,
much stuff coming on.
Other than hopefully you hadn't heard of Show Me a Hero or or Hannibal before, and now you can go watch them.
Yes, absolutely. Go watch everything we've talked about, if you're curious, if you haven't picked it up. You know, we do kind of talk about things, and we definitely have spoilers on this podcast, but I feel like even though we kind of talk a little bit vaguely about some of them, and you, I don't know, you should definitely check these shows out, even if you think it's quote-unquote ruined for you. You should still go watch all of these shows. I'm definitely excited about You're the Worst coming back. I still have to watch the first season of Fargo, but Fargo is not too far off either, October 12th. So hopefully in the coming weeks, when some of this stuff starts airing, we'll talk about it. Maybe next week we can do like an all-review pod or, I don't know, talk about...
Like review the show or just reviewing...
Like an all-review, like review on Comedy Central.
Oh.
Or like
just
review
like reviewing
and
shows.
Like review and another comedy or something. Maybe pick two comedies.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll get another one. We're going to try to put these up on a semi-regular basis, and we'll try to keep them between 45 and 55 minutes so that they're not just, like, painstakingly long.
I guess
but,
we're
pushing
the back end of that.
I guess we're going to wrap it up, I think. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.